Welcome to my Blog Talk radio show, Live Your Music. I'm Margot Joy Denader, and I'm a creative life balance coach, singer, songwriter, and the author of The Art of Living a Life You Love. I am happy to have Anil Prasad as my guest for Live Your Music this week. Join us for a conversation about interviews, interviewing musicians, and what he looks for in artists to interview. Welcome, Anil.
Thanks for having me.
I'm so excited to have you on the show. I'm so curious to hear about how you got started. Was it 25 years ago that you started your interviews? And tell us a little bit about what interviews is for the people that are new to you and how it got started 25 years ago.
Sure. Interviews is the Internet's first online music magazine. It was established in 1994, believe it or not, before Amazon, before Google. And it started out as an experiment. I was, a more conventional music journalist, you know, writing for, you know, print magazines and doing radio back in Canada. You know, I worked for some fairly big Canadian publications at the time. You know, I had work on the CBC, TV Ontario, the Sun Chain. And basically it started as just trying to see what the possibilities of the internet were in 1994. And I just wanted to see what would happen if you formatted content for the internet in long form in terms of music interviews. And I wanted to see if people would come and have a look at them. And certainly, because it hadn't been done before, an instant audience got created for it. And it sort of went from there and kind of built itself up very, very organically across a quarter century.
Wow. You know, I can't even believe it. I mean, I don't even remember when we started using the internet exactly in our work. And, you know, so that really was pretty early on in the whole time of the internet. And what was it like then compared to now, though?
Well, believe it or not, everything had to be hand-coded. There were none of these wonderful systems that allow you to format content, create graphics. You actually had to code everything in HTML. So there was a lot of testing that had to be done, a fairly steep learning curve. Graphics were super tiny, and believe it or not, it was still the era of dial-up internet, which almost no one can conceive of, really, in 2019. But the goal was to make everything as small as possible so people could access it over these very, very slow lines. So a completely different ballgame. I mean, on the positive side, I mean, it was the only music magazine listed in Yahoo for a very, very long time. And that meant that a lot of people would come and visit the site from across the world because they were just fascinated by the idea that you could access content in this way.
Yeah, that's one of the really cool things about the internet is that you can access information and people connect with people all over the world instead of just in your local area. And that's one of the things that I really do like about it is that. So when your interviews are amazing. I just have to say that right up front. But they are so detailed and so much like you're getting inside the person that you're interviewing. I know for sure because of you interviewing Robert Berry, and I've known him since forever, practically, anyway, since college days. And so when you interviewed him, I knew basically all the things that you had put in there, but it was so cool to see it all written out. So how did you decide to interview him? What was the reason that you chose to interview Robert?
Well, it's the same reason I choose to interview anyone, really. I'm looking for musicians that have really wide spectrum stories to tell. They've had a long-term career. That's not to say I don't do some emerging artists. I do those as well. But I admit I really love people that have, you know, careers with twists and turns and intrigue and struggles and overcoming those struggles and, you know, emerging, you know, the stronger individual coming out of it. And Robert certainly qualifies in that regard. Robert, it's sort of the epitome of the ideal topic, you know, someone that's seen and done everything, you know, from his, you know, earliest days, you know, in Northern California, working in the studio scene, you know, into the realm of Hush and sound tech, into his solo career, and then obviously into his group three with Keith Emerson and Carl Palmer, and then landing at rekindling that after a very significant absence from it with the 3.2 project. I mean, that was irresistible. You know, Robert was, as you're well aware, was unveiling a brand new album, and he had been aware of the work that I had been doing in interviews and invited me to his studio to have an early listen to the album. And obviously, how could I say no? Interviews covers a broad spectrum of music, but I will admit I do have a very strong interest in a certain era of art rock, and the band Three was actually very important to me back in 1988. I was still a teenager. It was the first time I ever saw Keith Emerson live. It was my first introduction to Robert Berry. And so, you know, all this time later, it was great to kind of revisit my experience as a teenager, propel it, you know, decades further into the future, and hear all of these tremendous stories from someone who's got these great tales to tell. Robert, I mean, Robert has worked in so many different contexts. And he's very philosophical about what he does. He's very humble, and he's very honest and revealing. So I think all of that combined into, you know, why I wanted to speak to him, and kind of also why I like to speak to anyone. I like people that are very introspective and, you know, really can contextualize what they have done and what they are doing, you know, within a bigger picture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love the name of your internet. I guess it's called Internet Magazine, right? The interviews, because you really do get into the whole inner part of the person. And I remember when you were interviewing Robert, because I know him, I saw how much time you spent with him and how you got so into details about it. And it just, I was just amazed. Is there anyone else out there ever that does this like you do, or are you unique?
I think there are a few other people. I mean, it's just rare in this day and age to, I mean, in the case of Robert, I believe we spent probably 7 hours together. And I have the carpal tunnel from the transcription to prove it, which yielded that enormous piece. I think things move a lot quicker in terms of the mainstream 24/7 news cycle, where people are, as journalists, are forced to turn things around instantly, aren't allowed to spend the time doing research or really understand what, in the case of music journalism, an artist is really doing, what their perspectives are, you know, what they want to communicate. It's very much a hamster wheel kind of environment. So with interviews, right from day one, I chose to create this kind of forum that didn't have those restrictions. The articles could be as long as they needed to be. I mean, the average piece online is probably 400 to 600 words max, usually associated with some horrible clickbait headline.
Right.
And that's not something I have any interest in. And so these pieces can take 80 to 100 hours, believe it or not, from start to finish, from the initial research phase to, if someone is as generous as, say, Robert Berry is, saying, come around for two sessions at Soundtech Studios and we'll spend as long as you need to get what you want. and then you have to take that and transcribe it and edit it. And maybe even consult with the artist again, which I did with Robert too, to fill in some additional gaps. So there's a certain, the pieces are at their best when the artist is very generous with their time and interest in what I do. And that's a lot of, at this point, 25 years after starting it, people kind of know what this is about. And certainly Robert knew what this was about and, you know, was willing to provide the time needed to get it done right.
Well, you know, it's really clear when you read what you wrote about Robert and then also in your book, Interviews. That is such a cool book. I got the Kindle version of it and started reading it to prepare for the interview, my interview with you, interviewing the interviewer. And John Anderson's interview that starts the book is just amazing. I don't know. I just loved how you got inside of him, and I learned so much about him and about Yes that I didn't even know. It was really cool. I'm really looking forward to reading the rest of the interviews in the book.
Yeah, John Anderson, like Robert, another person with a multi-decade career full of insane twists and turns. And yeah, talking and speaking to John, and I've spoken to him several times after that. And a little known fact is after that interview, actually John invited me to help him write an autobiography. Unfortunately, that didn't quite work out for various reasons, but I did get to know John very, very well at that point, and was immersed in John world, let's put it that way.
Well, I feel like your interview with Robert would make a great biography too, you know. I loved what you wrote and how you wrote it. I can't seem to put it into words, but it's more of a feeling that the way you write the interviews is not like anything I've read before by other people. And I just really, really encourage my listeners, our listeners, to go to your interviews website and check out. You have like over 500 interviews that are in there, I think, isn't it? Something like that.
I don't know if there's quite 500. There's certainly 300 or 400 of them on there. They're all my favorites. They're the ones I like from this career of interviewing people across decades. But yeah, there's plenty to keep someone busy if they're interested.
And that's at interviews.org. I noticed that it was .org and not .com, so I thought that's kind of an important thing to know so that you can get there, right?
Yeah, I mean, .org happened because in 1994, .com was specifically just for commercial businesses. And it was a lot more difficult to get a .com at that point. Again, these are kind of intricacies of the early internet. As time went on, I was able to get .com, .net, and probably four or five other suffixes. But by the time I acquired .com, so many people knew the site from .org that I was just stuck with it. So it's, you know, 25 years later,
so, well,
it's still .org is the main entry.
So if you did interviews.com, it would also go there, though?
It would still get you there. Pretty much anything. Interviews.anything will get you there at this point, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, I just love it that it's called interviews, and interviews and need to be interviews of the people that you're interviewing. So, you know, that's really, really cool. So now, when you went to see Robert play, that's when I got to meet you, was down in Redwood City, and he's on this tour, the 3.2 tour featuring Robert Barry, and they're playing the music from the 3 album and from the 3.2 album and some Emerson, Lake and Palmer. You went to all 3 shows here in California, is that right?
Yeah, the Northern California shows.
Yeah, that's true. There were four because there was one down in Southern California. And I don't know about you, but I really enjoyed the show. I thought it was incredible, and you must have liked it to have gone three times.
Yeah, like I said, this music does mean a lot to me. The fact that he was playing this broad spectrum of music, including, progressive rock covers, from his tribute albums with Magna Carta, was also of intrigue. I'm very cynical about most tribute projects that I believe are just done for the money and nothing else, or done so that someone has a version of a song that can be licensed to, film or television in place of an original artist production, making that cheaper and easier and essentially benefiting someone else. I think Robert's tribute albums are tremendously great. They might even be the only ones that matter, frankly, in the spectrum of progressive rock. I think almost all of the rest of them are completely disposable, except for his, frankly, because he actually got inside the pieces, reinvented them, turned them into something else, so that even if you are intimately familiar with the original version, if you listen to what he did with them, you were getting something completely new and different out of them. And that's what a tribute should be, rather than a note for note creation. And so for Robert to finally get out on the road, not only play the three Emerson Palmer 3.2 repertoire, but for him to do all this other material as well, just made it a great deal of fun. And, Robert hadn't been on the road for so long. So I thought, apart from his work with Greg Kent, of course, and December People, but in terms of presenting his own material, this was a brand new thing. So it felt like a special occasion. I think there were pretty much three or four nights in a row, and they were all local. So, why not? I mean, if the show is only going to be like an hour away from me, it felt silly to stay at home while something that interesting was happening locally.
I know. I really wanted to go to all three of them, but to get to Santa Cruz from Marin is actually quite a journey, and so that one was too far away. And then we had gone to the one in Redwood City, and we had thought about going to the one in Pleasanton as well, but we thought it was going to be at a smaller venue than it was there. And we've been to see December People at both places there, and we realized too late, just before the show was going on, that it was at the bigger place that we really liked a lot. And so that whole night I was going, oh, I want to be there. I wish I had been there. But I'm really glad that we went to the one in Redwood City, because it was a smaller one, and it was a chance to get to meet a lot of the other people who were there that know Robert, and including you. And I met Dwayne, who is a friend that's also been helping out with Rolf on the tour for the 3.2 tour. So, it was really great night to be able to meet the people, a lot of the people that really have been part of Robert's musical journey, and including you. And I was so curious to meet you after reading your interview with him. And then there you were right in front of us in line. It was really cool.
Sure. It was a lot of fun to meet you and to meet so many other interested people.
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely one of the great things about going to live shows, is that you get to meet the people who are performing the music, and you also get to meet other people who love the music and share the experience with them. So there's nothing like live shows as far as getting to really, really have an experience that you'll remember for the rest of your life. Now,
yeah, I would definitely agree with that.
What Robert had said also, that you've been a great supporter for him, but also actually kind of a mentor to him as well. And what do you have to say about that?
I don't know about that. Robert has said some very, very nice things. I think I probably helped encourage him a little bit at the early stages of that project. Again, he's been, you know, very nice in saying things like, you know, he wasn't sure how the 3.2 album would be welcomed by the world, you know, given that, you know, it's the spiritual successor to 3, but Carl Palmer and Keith don't actually play on it. And so he mm-hmm. had some concerns about how that would be received. And so he played me the album before it came out, and I expressed my enthusiasm for it. I thought it was extremely strong. I thought it was a very fitting tribute to Keith Emerson, and I thought he played the parts that would otherwise be attributed to Keith, in addition to new Keith-inspired parts, very, very well. And, certainly let the world know what I thought about it all. So if that helped Robert in some way, then I think that's great.
Yeah, and I know you well enough at this point to know that you would only say what you really meant. There's no way that you would just say it to be helpful, you know?
Well, I mean, the interviews pieces, like I said, take dozens upon dozens of hours to make happen, and I'm not going to do one of those for someone I don't like or mm-hmm. music I'm uninterested in. So I can't imagine spending 100 hours doing a piece on someone I hate or music I dislike. I'm sure there are people. I mean, when I had to do more conventional music journalism, especially when other people were calling the shots, I would be forced to write about people I had absolutely no interest in it. And I hated that completely. Mm-hmm. But at this point, I mean, yeah, I'm really writing about people that I have a very personal interest in.
And that comes through. That interest in that, I guess you'd call it love for what they're doing and creating, comes through in the interviews. So what do you do for fun? Robert said to ask you that. What do you do for fun?
What do I do for fun? I go to a lot of live music for fun. Absolutely. That's one of my favorite hobbies. I am a psychotic music collector, but, you know, you have to do things outside of that. Big basketball fan. I've got a great 11-year-old kid who's always keeping me very busy. He's also a musician, believe it or not. Because he's gone to so many gigs and he's met so many people, and he's seen Robert a few times play as well, that he decided that he was going to be a guitarist. There's that. He posted a photo of my cat.
I love this photo of your cat Amber, the new cat Amber. That's why I had to put it in the poster and in the slideshow. That is just such a priceless picture of the two of you.
Yeah, she's a crazy tortoiseshell cat with all of the tendencies that tortoiseshells have. Very, very feisty. But there's always been a cat around when I put these pieces together during the life of the initial years of interviews. There was a cat named Mimi around who meant a great deal to me and to my family. Unfortunately, she passed away fairly recently, but mm-hmm. You'll even see it. There's a dedication to her at the front of the book, actually. So we do love our cats as well.
Oh, yeah, we do too. We have a cat named Bender, and he's on my desk while I'm doing the show, and that's his favorite place to be during my show, so he's my assistant too. So when you had said that about Mimi on Facebook, I could totally relate. I could totally relate about how you felt about her, and it looks like Amber's filling in with lots of fun, so I'm really glad to hear that too.
Yeah.
We have only got 5 minutes left. Can you believe it? It's just, you know, the time goes by so quickly. Now, as your son being a musician, are you one too? I mean, I have a hard time believing that you wouldn't be one as well with how much you love music.
Yeah, it's not something I talk about, but really. But I can play guitar and bass, actually. I do understand notation. I do have a fairly serious interest in the constructs of music. I used to be an associate editor at Guitar Player Magazine and Bass Player Magazine, so I used to have to do this from a much more technical perspective, talking about pedals and effects and notation and tablature and what kind of batteries do you use in your electronics? All these ridiculous questions that these magazines forced me to ask musicians.
Uh-huh.
And even the musicians, while they would feign interest in the wonderful battery question, actually couldn't stand any of it, and they wanted to just talk about inspiration, why they do what they do, you know, what the meaning is behind their music, and that's what I wanted to focus on with interviews. And you know, I was doing guitar player and bass player in parallel with interviews for a long time. Mm-hmm. And they actually created some tremendously great opportunities for me. But yeah, I mean, to write for those magazines, you had to have a clue. So yeah, there's guitars and basses around the house, and I'm known to pick them up and fiddle around with them and slap the bass around, as Geddy Lee might say. But the official musician in the house is my son, Devon, absolutely.
Mm. That's so cool.
I think he's on his
what
like,
age
he's on
was
his
he
like
when
six.
He decided he wanted to learn?
Oh, about six. About 6 years old, I think. Again, you know, he's just grown up around musicians all the time. I think I've probably done 1,000 interviews at this point. He's probably already seen more concerts than most people will in their whole lifetimes at age 11. And so he just decided, hey, they can do it, I can do it. I thought, okay, well, sure. And yeah, now he plays fairly regularly locally, has kind of his own circle of friends who are musicians. And it's actually, kind of beyond my involvement to a certain degree. I support what he does. But he's got his own circle, and I think that's fantastic.
That is fantastic. We've only got 2 minutes left, so what's something that you'd like to leave our listeners with? Something quick.
I think, I presume most people listening to this are really rabid music aficionados. I think there's one thing. It's just the idea of, you know, it's really up to us to support musicians and not just supporting them with Facebook posts and likes and shares and all of that, but I think it's really, really hard for musicians to make a living in 2019. I think
mm-hmm.
streaming has been an economic fiasco for musicians, while it certainly helps them get their music out there. But anything people can do to financially support musicians, buying physical product, buying t-shirts, buying tickets, buying
mm-hmm.
whatever form of merchandise it is, I think has never been more important. And I know so many musicians personally, they are so grateful and so happy when people, you know, put their money where their mouth is and combine their love for the music with some sort of tangible economic support for them. So, I mean, if I'm
yeah, it's like saying thank
idea,
you, thank
yeah.
you with your money too, you know.
Yeah.
That is a great suggestion, and I totally agree. The show's called Live Your Music, and it's because I want people to live the music that they're hearing calling them. And you're doing that in such wonderful ways. And I really, really appreciate what you're doing, and also your suggestions about helping the artists by giving them money in whatever ways, you know, even send them money, you know, just send them a check.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you use a service like Bandcamp, you can actually tip the musician. But however you want to do it, if it just means going out there and going to shows, even that's great. Buying tickets.
Yes.
Getting your friends to come. Yeah, anything.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being on the show, and thank you for writing your interviews. And I hope you write a second book. I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me on.
Okay. Bye for now, O'Neill. Bye, everyone.
Okay,
love your music. Bye.